Okay, well, it's time to get started. Really a pleasure. I want to thank Rabbi Berger. He really made extra efforts to make sure he could be here on time. And I want to thank him, and as we'll hear, and as I mentioned, he teaches at the Yotzer Halakha program, and it's a pleasure to have him and to learn from him. Probably the most famous story of Tisha B'Av, that of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. Vakasha, Rabbi Berger.
Okay, thank you. Unlike your previous speaker, I'm not in Israel, I'm in New York, which means that I'm still sitting on the floor. But in about 1 minute or so, I'll be able to get up on the chair. So we might have a short little break for that transition.
I have about 18 minutes before I can sit on my chair.
Okay. okay. As Rabbi Kelman said, we're going to be spending this hour learning part of the Gemara about the Chorban, the rather well-known story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. You know, the halacha that you're not allowed to learn Torah on Tisha B'Av has this exception carved out that we're allowed to learn those things which are about the Chorban and those things which, you know, contribute to our sense of avelos, of mourning on Tisha B'Av. The Mishnah Berurah makes a comment when on that rule that even when one is learning those topics which it is permissible to learn, that the one shouldn't, I guess to put it maybe in our terms, one shouldn't be too overly intellectual about it, that there's a certain enjoyment one gets from the kind of, you know, sophisticated analysis in this very serious way of a topic, and the joy one gets from answering a question that is itself not in keeping with the avelos of Tisha B'Av. It's always a challenge when learning together on Tisha B'Av to try to maintain this balance between obviously doing learning together something that is going to hold our interest, at the same time that one doesn't lose sight of the emotion that's supposed to be accompanying us as we do so. So I'm going to frame with that in mind this shiur less as a crafted, organized presentation, and more as a learning the Gemara together with you, and highlighting certain issues in the Gemara, one particular that will carry us through most of our discussion, and look at another couple of sources along the way. This Gemara is a very long Gemara if one learns it in its entirety, but we are going to be focusing on the beginning of the Gemara, which is the most famous part of the Gemara. And I want to explore, in particular, one theme as we will see. I'll put the Gemara up on the screen for a couple of minutes, just to read through it, and then we'll have more to say about it. The Gemara in Maseches Gittin Daf Hey Amud Beis starts near the bottom there, where the highlight bar is on the side. Rabbi Yochanan said, "My desiv, what does the pasuk mean? The pasuk in Mishlei.
And soon it came. Ashrei Adam. Barrages of rockets fired at Israeli cities, including Tel Aviv."
Rabbi Kelman, can we mute?
Some strange reason, when I hit mute, it's not muting the person. I don't know why. If you can please mute yourself.
Okay.
I'm trying to mute them. I don't know why. Okay. Yeah.
Well, it's quiet now.
We're done. Yeah. Yeah.
My dechsiv, what is the meaning of the pasuk in Mishlei? Ashrei adam mefached tamid, happy, or you know, is the person who is always afraid. Umak shalibo, but on the other hand, a person who hardens his heart and does not feel that fear, yipol bira'a, that person will end up in trouble. And Rabbi Yochanan says the meaning of that pasuk is reflected in the following stories, three stories that relate to the Churban Habayis, HaKamsa Uvar Kamsa Chorav Yerushalayim, that because of these two people, Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, Yerushalayim was destroyed, and HaTarnagola V'Tarnagolta Chorav Tur Malkor, because of a rooster and a hen, the city of Har HaMelech was destroyed, and HaShaka D'Rispa Chorav Beitar, and because of a piece of a wagon, the city of Beitar was destroyed. So each of these was a stage in the Golos and the Churban first the Churban of Yerushalayim, what we mark on Tisha B'Av, and then some later developments where there's further destruction and further exile of the Jewish people. And the different stages, Rabbi Yochanan says, was an outgrowth of certain particular events. And the next three pages of Gemara address this in great detail. But we're going to be looking at this first one as the Gemara goes on to say, Kamsa uvar Kamsa charv Yerushalayim. The Yerushalayim was destroyed because of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. What was the, maybe worth mentioning now, the, let's actually do the first line of the story first. The Hu Gavra the Rachame Kamsa Val Devavi Bar Kamsa. There was a certain man who remains anonymous, unnamed throughout the story, who's had a friend whose name was Kamsa, and he had an enemy whose name was Bar Kamsa. And Avad Su'udasa, he made a Su'uda, some sort of a meal, a gathering of some sort. And Amrle the Shameh, he said to his servant, Zeal, I see the Kamsa, go bring me Kamsa, his friend. He wanted to invite his friend to this Su'uda. Azal and the servant went, I see le Bar Kamsa, and he instead brought Bar Kamsa to the Su'uda. And what ensues is a confrontation between the host and Bar Kamsa, the host being very upset by the presence of his enemy at this Su'uda. Very common question that's raised about this Gemara, which is not the one we're going to focus on, but you can't really go on without at least mentioning it, which is the question of whether Kamsa and Bar Kamsa are father and son. Kamsa is the person's name. Bar Kamsa means the son of Kamsa. The question is, are the two people, the one who was supposed to be invited and the one who was, a father and a son? If that's the case, it adds a certain level of color to the story that isn't there otherwise. Interestingly, Rashi, if you look here on the other side of the page, Rashi does not read the story that way. He just says, Kach Shem Shnei Yehudim. These are just the names of two Jews. So Rashi understood that it was a coincidence that that one of the person's father's name was the same as the other, but that they were not related. In any case, Asa, Bar Kamsa, came to the Su'uda, or maybe it means that the host arrived, and Ashkechei Dehava Yosef, and he found Bar Kamsa sitting there. Amarle, and he said to him, Mechti, let's see what's going on here. Hahu Gavra, Bal Devava Dehu Gavra. You are an enemy of me, of mine. My Bais Hacha, what do you want here? What are you doing here? Kum, get up. Puk, get out. Leave. So he tells him to leave the party. Amarle and Bar Kamsa said back to him, Hol Vasoi, since I'm already here, I already came. Shavkan, let me stay. And I will give you, I'll pay you for the cost of my meal if you let me stay. Amarle, he said back to him, Lo, said no, I refuse. Amarle, so Bar Kamsa said again, said, if you let me stay, I will give you half the cost of the entire Suda, the entire event. Amarle, Lo, he said, no, I refuse. You have to get out. Amar Le, even lachta mekula sudasich. He said, I'll pay for the entire party. Amar Le Lo, he said, no. Nakte biade, he took him in his hand, v'ukme, and he lifted him up, v'afke, and he threw him out. And that's the end of what happened at the party. And afterwards, Amar Bar Kamsa said to himself, Ho'ol v'havu yasvi rabbanon v'lo machube, since there were rabbis, there were rabbanim sitting there at this event, and they did not protest. They didn't prevent the host from kicking me out. Shma mina kanichalahu. That proves to me that they were okay with this, that this didn't bother them, what the host did. Ezel, I'm going to go. And echol b'hu kurtza be'malka. I'm going to cause trouble for them with the government, with the Roman government. He wants to now get back at the Jewish community because of what happened to him at this event. Azal, so he went, and Amarle le Kesar, he said to the Caesar, Mardubach Yehudai, the Jews are rebelling against you. Amarle, the Caesar said to Miemar, who said, what are you talking about? Prove it to me. Amarle, so he said to him, you should do the following, Shadar luhu karbana, send them a karban, send a sacrifice to be brought in the mikdash, in the temple, send it to Jerusalem, and Chazis im Makarvin lay, and see if they will actually sacrifice it, if they will bring this offering in their temple from you. In general, this was a perfectly normal practice in the Beis HaMikdash for non-Jews and certainly non-Jewish leaders to bring karbanos in the Mikdash. But Azal, so he went and Shadar Biyade Egla Telasa. The Caesar, so the Caesar, sent with Bar Kamtza back to Yerushalayim. He sent him an egel, right? Means a calf. And there's some debate and question as to what this word telasa means. It comes from telasa, generally means three. Rashi explains that, not here, but I believe elsewhere, Rashi explains that egla telasa means a third born egel, the third of its the third one born to its mother. Tosfos here discusses this and somewhat convincingly explains that it doesn't really have anything to do with three, but it simply means as he says here, perush bari vatov. It means a particularly nice and healthy and good animal as a karbon. So that's what the Kesar sent with Bar Kamsa back to the Mikdash. Bahadi de Kaasi, and what was Bar Kamsa's nefarious plan? On the way back to Yerushalayim, Shada Beimuma, he put a blemish on the animal. He injured the animal in some minor way. He did it benivsvasayim on the upper lip of the animal. Va'amrila and others, another version of the story says that the blemish, the injury that he gave the animal was not in his lip, but bedukin shaba'ayim, but was rather in the white of its eye. Why, what's significant about these particular places on the body of the animal? Duchta, either one is a place, the dun havamuma, which according to us, meaning according to halacha, that kind of injury is a blemish which makes the animal unfit for bringing as a sacrifice in the mikdash. But udidhu, lavmumahu, but for them, meaning for the Romans and their religious sacrificial service, although they also had this notion that you would not bring an imperfect and a blemished animal as a sacrifice, this particular minor kind of mum, minor kind of blemish, was something they did not consider significant. They considered it de minimis, and would not have led them to avoid bringing this as a karban. And so this was Bar Kamsa's way of forcing this issue, of making of bringing something which he expected the Chachamim in Yerushalayim to refuse to bring as a karban, but which the Romans would not accept that it was unfit and would therefore be greatly insulted by them refusing to bring this karban. And that would prove, as Bar Kamsa was trying to do, prove to the Caesar that the Jews were rebelling against him. So this animal then came to Yerushalayim. Savur Rabbanan Lekruve Mishum Shalom Achus. So the Chachamim were put in this pickle, and they had this idea that maybe they should, even though it was halachically forbidden to bring this animal as a karban, they decided maybe we should, they thought maybe we should do it anyway because of Shalom Achus, to keep peace with the government. This is a very serious matter. And maybe even though halachically we're not allowed to, the concern for the relationship with the government and what that could mean should override this, and we should be allowed to do it anyway. Amar Luhu Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas, Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas, one of the chachamim there, said to the other chachamim, Yomru bali mumin kraven lagabe mizbeach, that we can't do that. We can't allow this blemished animal onto the mizbeach, onto the altar in the temple. Because then what are people going to say? People are going to see us doing this, and they're going to think that this is permissible. And down the line, people might start more generally violating this halacha and bringing imperfect animals into the mikdash in violation of halacha. And we can't do something that could possibly have that consequence. So alternatively, the chachamim thought maybe savur lemiktale d'lalezo v'lema. They had this other idea. Well, maybe instead we should execute Bar Kamsa. Because he's doing this terrible thing, putting the whole Jewish community, the whole Jewish nation at risk. And maybe we shouldn't bring the karban, but we should kill him so he has no opportunity to go back to the Kesar and report on what happened. Amr lu Rabbi Zechariah, but the same Rabbi Zechariah ben Avakula said to the Chachamim, you can't do that either, because Yomru matil mum bakachim yehari. The people will say, they'll think that somebody who intentionally injures an animal and puts a blemish on it, that somehow that's a capital crime, which it's not. And they'll think that that's why we're executing him. And again, Rabbi Zechariah was concerned that a false message of what the proper halacha, what the proper Torah guidance is, would make it out into the community. And that's something that we cannot countenance. Therefore, we can't do that either. We can't execute Bar Kamtza. And that's the way it was left. And they didn't bring the Karban. Rabbi Yochanan said, actually, let me skip that for a moment. If we skip a couple of lines down, begins the next, you know, two pages of Gemara, which we're probably not going to be have the time really to go into during this hour. Maybe we'll come back to some of it if we have time. But the few lines later, it says, Shadari Lavaihu Leniron Kesar, that in the wake of what happened, in the wake of their refusal to bring the Karban, the Caesar in Rome sent Nero, general, to besiege and destroy Yerushalayim. And this then begins a series of events, which is described at great length in the ensuing Gemara, of the battle for Yerushalayim, the siege of Yerushalayim, a lot of the tragedies that happened. I think there was a shiur earlier today about Marta Bas Baitos, which is, a story later on this page of Gemara, which ultimately leads to the Romans' destruction of Yerushalayim, the destruction of the Mikdash. And it all started with Bar Kamtza proving to the government that the Jews were had it in for them because they refused to bring this karba. And the Bar Kamtza part of the story concludes with this comment of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan and the sanuso shel Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulas hechriva es beisenu v'sarfa seichalenu v'higvisanu me'artzenu. Literally translated, the modesty of Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulis, the one who argued, who was concerned about the halachic mistakes that might come from various actions that they could have taken, the modesty of Zacharia ben Avkulis destroyed our house, the house of Hashem, the Sarfas Echaleinu, and burned our temple, Higli Sanome Artzeinu, and exiled us, the Jewish people, from our land. That was his attitude that was responsible for the ultimate churban in the context of this decision that had to be made. Okay, if you excuse me, I'm just going to take one moment to get up off the floor and then I will continue. Okay, so that's the basic story of what we call the story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza, which is really the story of Bar Kamtza. Kamtza never actually makes an appearance in the story. Now, what I'd like to spend a little time here trying to figure out, and I'm not the first one to try to do this, is to try to figure out what's the relationship between the opening line of the Gemara and this story. And in particular, to try to resolve a pretty significant problem that arises when we begin to think about that. The story is very easy to summarize, right? The wrong guy came to the party. The host was very upset. The person pleaded with him to stay and he kicked him out, you know, in a kind of public way. He was very embarrassed and he got really mad that nobody put a stop to it. And he went to the Roman government and everything went bad from there. And then the end of the story is this back and forth among the Chachamim about whether to bring this karban or not. And because of Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulis' arguments, they don't. And that's what leads to the problem. That's the summary of the story. But it's easy to get wrapped up in the story and forget how the Gemara started. The Gemara started by saying, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, my dechsiv, what does this pasuk mean? The pasuk says, Ashrei adam mefached tamid, umakshe libo yipol bera'a. Happy or well-served, perhaps is a better translation in this context, is the person who is always afraid. Person who hardens his heart and you know doesn't feel that fear, that's the person who's going to end up in trouble. Rabbi Yochanan says that the story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza is a reflection of this pasuk. And so the question is, how is that? Where in this story do we see somebody or more than one person, whoever it is, being afraid and that serving them well, or alternatively, not being afraid and that serving them poorly? In general, one could ask the question in the wake of this story, whom is this story blaming for the Churban? Whose fault was it? Who's the, if you will, the villain in this story? If anybody wants to throw out a possibility or two for a moment,
Well, there's more than one, but the original is the party giver.
Okay, so what option number one is the host, right? Because it was his meanness, right, to Bar Kamsa that caused the whole thing. Okay.
The bystanders.
Okay. The bystanders, right? And not just any bystanders.
All of them.
Right? Specifically, somebody wrote in the comments, right? The Rabbanim, right? Remember when Bar Kamsa left the party when he was kicked out, he said there were rabbis there and they didn't do anything about this. They must have been okay with them. And so that's why I'm going to go and complain to the Romans, right? In other words, if it was just one mean guy who was already his enemy anyway the day before also, right? That wouldn't have been a reason to bring down the Jewish people, okay? That's awesome. Just one mean guy. What really got his goat, what made him so angry, was that the people in charge there, the spiritual leadership, sat there and watched and didn't do anything about it. And that's what led to his going to the Romans. And leading to the Churban. So you could argue that, as somebody said, the bystanders, but and more specifically, the rabbis, the chachamim who were there.
Now, Arya ben Afkolis.
Okay. Now the other villain in the story, potential, maybe that's too strong a word to use, but the other person being perhaps being criticized in the story, is Rabbi Zechariah ben Afkolis, right? Because it says at the end of the Gemara that it was because of what he did, his, what the Gemara called modesty, right, that led to the Churban. Okay, before we move on.
Why is Bar Kamsa going to a party of his enemy without maybe privately going to see, I got this invitation, it was very nice of you, or I want to make up with you, but to just show up, that's not good.
So that's a very interesting comment. Yes, I would say on the one hand, the fourth candidate for the person who's at fault here is obviously Bar Kamsa, right? I mean, he's the most obvious answer to this, right? I mean, he's the one who actually, when, you know, because of a slight that was made to him personally, he decided to try to bring down the Jewish people. I mean, if there's anybody at fault, it's him. He's the one. Went to the Romans. He's the one who lied about the Jews revolting. He's the one who played this trick to get the whole thing to happen, right? I mean, you know, it's I always find it interesting. I think this is the way people usually read this Gemara. When you think about this question, who's at fault? Bar Kamsa ends up being the last one that's mentioned, even though it's the most obvious, right?
I think what about Kamsa?
Because it is obvious, right? And we get the sense that what the Gemara is trying to teach us here, right, is about the fault of others, right? The fault of Bar Kamsa is obvious because he's the one who actually did it. And what Gemara is trying to teach us something a little bit more subtle about the impact that other people's activities and had. Obviously, there's no excuse for doing what Bar Kamsa did. However, it was very interesting that whoever was speaking a moment ago said that, faulted Bar Kamsa for having kind of shown up at the party. Right. To begin with. Right. He should have realized that maybe there was a mistake here. Right. So the truth is, I was actually originally thinking about doing this, but given the time constraints, I'm not going to. There's a lot of interesting discussion we could have about trying to figure out, you know, what likely happened in the context of the party. What are the things going through all the minds of all the different players at different points? Did Bar Kamsa realize it was a mistake and decide to go anyway just to show him up? Did Bar Kamsa not realize it was a mistake and maybe he thought that this person was trying to be nice and make up with him and that's why he came, right? I mean, you know, did the host realize that a mistake had been made by his servant, or did he just think that this guy was crashing his party? I mean, there are so many different questions that could be raised about what was going through people's minds that could affect exactly how we analyze the story. But I'd like to move away from
one
that.
Just one minute.
For now.
Rabbi Bar Kamsa was the only person that tried to be proactive and to change the situation. No one else did anything.
Right. Except what he did was terrible, right?
And yes.
Correct. So with that in mind, so we've sort of made a list of, you know, who are the people who did something wrong. And presumably, when Rabbi Yochanan at the beginning of the Gemara says, Ashrei Adam Mefachei Tameru Maksha Libo Yipol Bera, he says there's something bad about not recognizing fear, right? You should always be afraid. That means that what Rabbi Yochanan is indicating is that there's somebody in the course of this episode who should have been afraid but wasn't. And that's what led to their problem, right? So who was that? When Rabbi Yochanan introduced this story with that pasuk, who was he talking about? Who was it that should have been fearful, should have been afraid of something, and acted because in some bad way because he wasn't afraid of something? And the various possibilities, right, are it was the host, it was the rabbis, or it was Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkubas, right? Those are the kind of the options here. And we need to think about this, right? It could be that he's criticizing the host for not being afraid enough, right? What should the host have been afraid of? So the simplest reading of this Gemara, which, you know, often the simplest is the most compelling. I personally don't find this particularly compelling, but different mefarshim say different things, take different sides on this issue. The simplest, most almost sort of pedestrian way to read the story is that the message of the story is that a person always has to be worried about the consequences of one's actions. You know, you think that you're just, the person who was kicking this person and embarrassing him in public and kicking him out of the party. So he probably realized he was doing something not so nice and that this person was being embarrassed. But he didn't stop to think about what could happen as a result. Right, and that the message then of Ashrei Adam Mefachei Tamid is saying that you think that when you do an Avero and you do something, when you commit a sin, you do something wrong, especially when it's been Adam L'Chavero, that it's a one-time thing. You're doing something bad. The person feels bad. Okay, you did something wrong. It's over. But no, whenever you do something that has an impact on another person, you don't know what the potential consequences of that are. You don't know what the reaction is going to be. You don't know what mayulad yom, right? What could happen as a consequence? And what happened as a consequence of this private party, this guy throwing out his enemy from the party, was that the Yerushalayim was destroyed and the Jewish people were exiled. In which case, the Musar, the message of this Gemara is a very general message about yiras hachet, the fear of sin, right? That we should always be cognizant of what the consequences of our actions could be. And that's the fear that a person should always be thinking about. The same kind of interpretation could then be taken to another level if you put the onus not on the host of the party, but on the chachamim who are sitting there, right? The rabbis who were sitting there, for them, it's a bit of a different kind of thing. They're not the ones who are doing the Avera, but they're the ones who could do something about it, right? The argument is that they, when they're deciding whether to intervene or not, that Rabbi Yochanan is saying, remember this pasuk in Mishlei that teaches the cost of not intervening is not just this Avera. The cost of not intervening, especially since you are in a position of leadership, could be something of much greater import and much greater and much greater impact down the line. And that's something that you, especially in leadership, have to always have on your minds. Now, the third possibility is that the comment of Rabbi Yochanan from the Pasuk Ashri Adam, Mefachei Tamid, is a reference to Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulas. And that Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulas, when he was, you know, arguing with the other Chachamim about whether to take some sort of dramatic action in the face of this danger, and which the Gemara explicitly said, you know, his actions led to the Churban, that it's that to which Rabbi Yochanan was referring with this pasuk. Now, right, but before we even get into the substance, off the bat, it seems, I'll speak for myself, and again, different mafarshim say different things. That's the most compelling possibility here, you know, for my mind, for two reasons. One is that it's Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulas that the Gemara explicitly attributes the Churban to at the end of the story, right? The Gemara didn't say the Churban, you know, that the host of the party destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, right? It said Zacharia ben Avkulas destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. And it would make sense for the pasuk that's being quoted as the frame for the issue to be a reference to him. But more, even more than that, though, is if maybe I'll share the screen for a moment, is to take note of who was the one who made this comment at the end of the Gemara? Who was the one who said that the modesty of Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulas destroyed the Mikdash?
Rabbi Yochanan.
Marseille. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, right? It's the same person. Rabbi Yochanan is the one who opened the Gemara by quoting the Pasuk, Mai dechsiv, Ashrei Adam, Mefachei Tamid, Umak Shelibo Yipal Bira. And then says Akamtzu bar Kamtzachar Yerushalayim and tells the whole story and then concludes that part of the story by Rabbi Yochanan himself saying Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulas is the reason for the destruction of the Mikdash. So the fact that Rabbi Yochanan is the author of both of these comments, right, I think points, you know, further to the possibility that this was a comment about Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulas. I'm open to the possibility that it's not, and maybe this really was a reference to the host or the Chachamim. But when we, and this is the key issue that I'd like to focus on, when we think carefully about the episode with Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulas at the end of the story, even whether this was supposed to be a reflection of Ashrei Adam Mefachei Tamid or not, whether it was supposed to be a reflection of Ashrei Mefachei Tamid or not, there's a serious problem. And that serious problem is that the episode of Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulas actually seems to contradict what Rabbi Yochanan says at the beginning of the Gemara. What was the point at the beginning of Gemara? Was that you always have to be afraid of something. If you're not afraid, bad things are going to happen. Well, what happens in the story of Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulas? Rabbi Zacharia ben Avkulas was the one who was acting afraid, right? The Chachamim were saying, we got to do something, right? We got to do something drastic about this situation, because we're in trouble. And it was Zacharia ben Avkulas, he was the, you know, the person saying, but how could we do that? That could have consequences. That could have bad consequences. People are going to look at the wrong thing.
But he lost sight of the big picture.
Okay.
He focused on the.
Correct. Okay. But he was the one who was acting worried, right? Afraid about, we can't do this because of the consequences of what might happen. If we execute him, people are going to think this. And this part, this is kind of what you were just saying. And so let me just finish the thought before I get to that. He was the one who was being cautious, right? Let's not make this big decision because we have to consider the consequences. But it was his caution that was the problem, right? When at the beginning of the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan said, you have to be afraid, right? So how is it that it's good to be worried and afraid, but it's apparently terrible to be cautious? This part of the episode also calls our attention to the fact, and this is, I think, what somebody who was commenting a moment before said, which is that, you know, the episode at the party is pretty straightforward, right? Some guy is being publicly embarrassing somebody, regardless of whether he might have had good reason to be annoyed. That's not a good thing to do, right? And you should have found some other way to deal with it. It's a simple situation, right? If you there was a right way to handle it, a wrong way to handle it, and the guy did an aveira, he did a bad thing, okay? And when you're thinking about, you know, worrying about the consequences of your actions, okay, if you're going to do something bad, it might have bad consequences. But in the story, at the end of the story, where our attention is called to the fact that sometimes the problem is figuring out what you should be afraid of, right? Especially when the stakes are high, things are complicated, right? And Rabbi Zecharia ben Avkulis was worried about, you know, the future religious consequences for people, and everybody else, the other chachamim, they were worried about the material consequences for the Jewish people, right? And what was going to be, right? What should we be more afraid of? We should be more afraid of the, you know, maintaining the future of Torah, or should we be more afraid of, you know, the what might happen if the Caesar gets angry? Right. And figuring out what to be afraid of is often exactly the problem. Well, let's take another minute to look a little bit more closely at what was Rabbi Zecharia ben Avkulis's core problem. What was really wrong with what he was saying? And for this, I have to thank the rabbi of my shul, Rabbi Larry Rothwax, who quoted this source recently, and I had not been aware of it before. And it really sheds a lot of light on, I think, on this discussion. We skip ahead in the booklet past the whole Gemara to after the Gemara in Brachos, okay, the Tosefta and Maseches Shabbos. Now we're not supposed to be learning any regular Torah today, so we'll just very quickly, just to, you know, this is all in the service of learning our Gemara. But the Tosefta and Maseches Shabbos quotes a debate between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai about a detail in the halachos of muktzah. You finish eating your food and you have these, the bones and the shells on the table, on your plate or whatever it is. And they're muktzah. Now they're useless. They serve no purpose. So they're just garbage. And so they're muktzah. So what do you do? So Beis Hillel omrim magbiyan me'al ha'shulchan atzmo sukliping. Beis Hillel was of the opinion, for whatever reason, we're not learning Hilchos Muktzah now. He thinks that's not a problem. It's mutter. You're allowed to pick them up and throw them away. Beis Shammai omrim mesalik es hatabla kula umenara. Beis Shammai said, no, you can't pick them up directly. You can only pick them up indirectly. So they would have some sort of, it wasn't like a table with, there was a kind of a slab of wood on top of a stilt. They weren't really attached. You can kind of pick up the whole table. And he said, you pick up the whole table and you shake it off. You don't do it directly. That's the machlokas. Then the Tosefta says this, Zecharia ben Avkulis, or here it's Avkibos, lo hayanoheg, lo kedivrei Beis Shammai, velo kedivrei Beis Hillel. He didn't do either one. He didn't pick up the bones. He didn't pick up the table. Ella, rather, what did he do? Notel umashlich la'achar hamita. He would pick up and throw it behind the bed, really means the seat that they were sitting on. What does that mean? So if you look at this perush on the side, just for quick clarity, lo nitzarech l'shum tiltol, dekesha ochlan hechzir panav v'hishlichan michtoch piv la'achorei hamita. What did Zecharia ben Avkulis do? He when he was eating his food, he didn't eat it over the table. When he was eating his chicken or whatever, he would turn around, you know, and eat it so that when he was done, the bones would just fall on the floor and you wouldn't have to worry about them being on the table. That's what he did. And what does the Tosefta then conclude, kind of out of nowhere? Amar Rabbi Yossi, and v'sanuso shor Rabbi Zecharia ben Avkulis sarfa esaheichal. The modesty of Rabbi Zecharia ben Avkulis burned the mikdash. Okay, what in the world does that have to do with Hilchos Muktzah, with what's going on here? So obviously, what the message of this Tosefta is that the character flaw that the Gemara was calling attention to in Rabbi Zecharia ben Avkulis and was reflected in his conversation with the Chachamim in the context of Bar Kamtza's evil efforts, is the same character trait that's being reflected in this Tosefta, right? What is this character trait? What was Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis's kind of tendency? And the answer here is pretty clear, and that is indecisiveness, right? Zechariah ben Avkulis, he didn't want to follow Beis Hillel. He didn't want to follow Beis Shammai. He was too worried about maybe Beis Hillel's wrong, maybe Beis Shammai's wrong, maybe what I'm doing will be a violation of halacha. And so instead, I'm going to do everything I can in order to simply avoid the issue, right? So I don't actually have to make a decision. To the extent that every time he had a Shabbos meal, he would eat sitting backwards so that the bones would fall on the floor, right? So it's that indecisiveness that was reflected at that moment. And knowing this about Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis, and especially since the Tosefta says it's that very same thing that destroyed the Mikdash, brings us back to our story about Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis and the other Chachamim and Bar Kamtza. You know, we read the story and we think that what the Chachamim said, we should bring the Karban or we should execute Bar Kamtza. And Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis says, no, we can't do that. You should not bring the Karban. You should not execute him because the consequences of that would be terrible. But now that we see this Tosefta, I think we know that that's not what was going on. This wasn't an argument in which some people were taking one position and Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis was taking another position. That's not what was going on. Zechariah ben Avkulis wasn't taking a position. He was just being basically a nonstop devil's advocate. Right? They said, we've got to do this. And he said, oh, but if you do that, then this bad thing might happen. They said, okay, we're going to do this. And he said, oh, but if you do that, maybe this bad thing might happen. Right? What Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis wasn't making, taking a position that we shouldn't do that or we shouldn't do that. He simply couldn't make up his mind. Right? He couldn't, because he was always so worried about what the consequence of each possible decision was. That he couldn't get away from the vacillation and actually come to a decision. And it's interesting when you look at the story, the Gemara actually never says openly what they did, right? The Chum said, we should do this. And he said, well, what about this? And then the next thing you know, the carbon was brought and the Nero and Kesar was on the way. Okay. And indecisiveness comes from excessive fear, right? He's always too afraid of every possible consequence. And that, in a certain sense, deepens the problem with, isn't this exactly the opposite of Ashrei Adam Mefached Tamid? It's the fearful person that was causing the problem, not the fearful person that was the one with the good consequence. By the way, when thought of in these terms, in terms of indecisiveness, it's interesting to think back to the rabbis at the party also.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder, do you think, my guess is, like, what do you think? That the rabbi sitting at that party, when they saw this happening, they saw this guy, you know, pleading to stay, and then this person picks him up and starts bringing him to the door to throw him out. Do you think that the chachamim sitting there made a clear, firm decision in their minds? They weighed the options and decided, I am not going to intervene because I think that's the right thing to do.
No, they vacillated also.
Exactly, right? What happens to all of us whenever we're faced with something that would be very uncomfortable to do, but we know is probably the right thing to do, right? Every time you're sitting on the train or the bus and somebody walks on who you think you should probably stand up and give their seat, but you're not sure and you kind of vacillating back and forth, right? But you know what the right thing to do is. Sometimes you do it, sometimes you don't, right? But what happened for these chachamim, right, is that they were vacillating. They were not indecisive. And by the time they would have come to a decision, it was already too late. Interestingly, by the way, in that vein, in the Midrash Rabbah on Eicha, the same story is told. The story is told in the Gemara in Gittin, except that in the story in the Medrash, it reports that Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulis was one of the rabbis at the party, which feeds into this point.
Indecisiveness.
Now, I'm sorry?
Indecisiveness.
Yes. Okay. We have about 10 minutes left here. So let me try to get to the kind of concluding point here.
So what we've just done is we've set up a, what seems to be a problem, and then we've learned more about Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulis, which has made the problem worse, right? Which is there's this fearfulness is what seems to be the problem. When Rabbi Yochanan at the beginning of the story was praising fear as being what contributes to doing the right thing. So let's look for a moment we're not going to read these through because we don't have time. There's another Gemara that quotes this pasuk, Ashrei Adam Mefached Tamid, etc. And it's Gemara in Brachos Daf Samach Amar Aleph, and it's quoted by Tosfos on the Gemara in Gittin, which we'll get to in 1 second. This Gemara tells two quick stories about a student who was walking with one of his rebbeim, and he was just, very nervous, afraid, for no particular reason. And the Rebbe criticized the student. He said, it quotes a pasuk that it's sinful to be afraid. And the student responds to him, what do you mean it's sinful to be afraid? What about the pasuk, Ashrei Adam Mefached Tamid, right? It's a good thing to be afraid all the time. And the response was, Hahu Bedivrei Torah Ksiv. That when are you supposed to be afraid? Really, being afraid is a bad thing. When is being afraid a good thing? That's in the context of Divrei Torah. Meaning what? So almost all of the Mefarshim explain that means that you should always be afraid that you might forget what you learned, and that you should never just rest on your laurels and think, okay, I've learned this Torah and now I have it. You're afraid that you should always be afraid you're going to forget it, and that will motivate you to review and to learn more and to make sure that it stays with you. That's what the Gemara says. That's where the appropriate fear is. Okay. Now we come to the Tosfos on the Gemara in Gittin, on the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, at the very beginning, says, what's going on here? He quotes that Gemara in Brachos, and that Gemara in Brachos says that's bedivrei Torah, that the when it's proper to be afraid is with regard to Torah. Shedoeg shelo yishkach talmuda, the person should be worried that he might forget. V'chozer al mishnah so tamid, and that way you'll review all the time. So what is that? So how is that reconcilable with this Gemara, with the Gemara about Kamsa and Bar Kamsa? The fears here are not fears about Torah, learning Torah, obviously, right? So, and the other Gemara said that in general it's actually a bad thing to be afraid. So What is it that's good about fear in this Gemara about Kamsa and Bar Kamsa that's somehow analogous to the fear of forgetting one's learning? So look at what Tosfos says. Very interesting. Tosfos says, what's similar here? Shebatchu al rov tovasam v'shalvasam. They had bitachon, they had trust, they relied on the magnitude of their good situation and their peace in order to embarrass Bar Kamsa. Right? Tosfos, unlike what I was saying before, Tosfos is on the side that the pachad here is a reference to the rabbis or the host of the party. But he says they relied on the magnitude of their peace to embarrass Bar Kamsa. V'haya lahem lefached v'lidog min hapur'anos. They should have been afraid and worried about the possible bad consequences that could come from their behavior. The lo dummy la adam ha mispache bechinam. And it's not like somebody who's just worrying for no reason. Okay, now I want to pick up on one particular aspect of what Tosfos said. What's the problem, says Tosfos? Is that they're relying on rov tovasam v'shalvasam. Meaning what? The way he was understanding it, it was in the context of this party, right? So they're sitting at this party. Life seems good, right? I mean, they're under Roman rule, but they've been under foreign rule for centuries already at this point, right? Life is pretty good. We're able to sit around and eat and drink and have parties. The idea that something bad, really bad, could happen was not on their radar, right? They understood that you can have a good day and a bad day, and there can be good things can happen and tragedies could happen. But the notion that there could be a Churban HaBayis and an exile of the Jewish people was something that was not on their minds at all. Batchu berov tovasam v'shalvasam. They were relying on the fact that since times are good, times are good. And that's, there's no reason to worry that that might change. Similar to somebody who's learned Torah, right? I already learned it. So that's status quo, right? Why should the status quo change? It is what it is. And so the message of that other Gemara Brachos is, no, the status quo can change, right? You have to be worried that you might forget what you learned and you have to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And what Tosfos is indicating is that the same thing is true here too, that it's important and necessary to always recognize and be worried that the status quo might not always be here. And when he says, when Rabbi Yochanan says, Ashrei Adam Mefached Tamid, Umach Shelibo Yipol Bira'ah, that's what he's getting at. When we talk about fear, so of course people can be afraid of all sorts of things. Sometimes being afraid is a good thing. Sometimes being afraid is a bad thing. And very often, as we said before, when the stakes are high, you have a choice between which thing to be afraid of, right? And you have to make decisions based on which thing you're more afraid of. But that's not what Rabbi Yochanan was talking about at the beginning of the Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan was trying to make a much more targeted, specific, and fundamental and important point. And that is, there's something that a person always needs to be worried about that people usually aren't worried about. People are worried about the little things. This could go wrong, that could go wrong, something could go wrong for me or my family, right? But when times are good, the idea that the whole rug could be ripped out from under everything and that the world could be completely turned upside down, and that this beautiful Beis HaMikdash that was built by Herod, right, not so long ago, and is the toast of the Middle East, that could be burned to the ground, and that the Jewish people who have lived in this land for centuries could you know, very soon be suffering the ignominies and pains that are described in Megillas Eicha. That was not on the minds of the people sitting at that party at all. That's what Rabbi Yochanan was talking about. He says, that doesn't mean that this should be something that causes you to be constantly anxious, right? But when making decisions, and that's the other reason why I think this message is even better targeted for the end of the story, for the debate between Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas and the Chachamim. What happened at the party, they did an Avera, it was a bad thing, people should have stopped him, right? But what happens at the end of the story, when this Bar Kamtza brings this carbon with the mum, and they have to decide, should we violate the Mikdash and violate Halacha, or should we execute Bar Kamtza, right? In order, because we're worried about the future of the Jewish people. So that was Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas's flaw. Right? The other Chachamim, they listened to what Rabbi Yochanan had said, so to speak. Rabbi Yochanan was generations later, but they imbibed this message of the Pasuk, Ashrei Adam Mefached Tamid. They recognized that something bad could happen, something bad with a very big, fat, bold capital B could happen. Right? Especially when they were actually even more in the moment, when this carbon was here, and they sort of realizing what could happen if we turn this down, right? They were aware of the possible consequences. And Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas was too indecisive to be able to take that into account. He was the makshe libo yipol bira that Rabbi Yochanan was criticizing. He was the one who he couldn't. It was too difficult to accept the possibility that something that bad could happen, that the whole, not just that something bad could happen within the framework in which we live, but that the whole framework in which we live could disappear and be completely turned upside down. That was something that Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas that couldn't register in his mind. And as a result, he was just viewing this like a regular, okay, we should either do this or we should do this. It could be this decision or that decision, and didn't really absorb the significance of the moment.
But the actual problem
that the Tosfos are calling our attention to in this Tosfos.
But the actual
not so much that you should, it's not so much that you shouldn't be afraid, that you need to be afraid. What he's calling attention to is the problem of complacency. And when you when you mix complacency with indecisiveness, that leads to the Chorban HaBayis. That's the message of Ashrei Adam Mefached Tamid, Umach Shelibo Yipol Bira. And, you know, this is a very sobering message. And it's not something, of course, that Rabbi Yochanan means that we should be thinking about every day and making us depressed and anxious about everything. But Tisha B'Av is the one day when this, in fact, is the message. This is what we read about in Kina after Kina after Kina, that there was a time when the Jewish people were riding along and things were nice and things were good. And then the rug was pulled out so badly that led to so much pain and so much suffering. And which unfortunately, of course, is something that has, that we know now, has happened over and over again, during the course of our history. And Tisha B'Av is the day when we think about not just the tragedies. You know, I just came, as Rabbi Kelman mentioned, I just came from the, a few minutes before I started this year, came from the funeral of a 50-year-old man. You know, tragedies happen all the time, and they cause great suffering. But that's not what we're talking about on Tisha B'Av. What we're talking about on Tisha B'Av is tragedy and catastrophe of a magnitude that unfortunately has happened too often to the Jewish people over time. And today we mourn all of those various times in which a world that seemed to be somehow moving along in one piece was ripped asunder, causing untold suffering to both individual Jews and to the Jewish people. And we sit today and we mourn the extraordinary, the abnormal suffering that has been visited upon us both during and since the Churban HaBayis. And that's the message we need to take when looking to the future of the Jewish people. And just we should have Tisha B'Av somewhere in the recesses of our mind the rest of the year to remember that that can always happen. And that we need to sometimes make decisions accordingly, something that is even more important for the leadership of the community. Okay, the last part I wanted to talk about, which I'm not going to have time to do, is the last line of the Gemara at the very end, but another opportunity.
Rabbi Thank Berger. You,
Oh. Hold on. Just because we're very pressed for time, I'm sorry to do this, but we'll have to have Rabbi Berger back, please God, which he actually is coming back. He'll be teaching during Elulzman, a series on the Machzor. But I know we don't have time to do the questions. I'm sorry. Normally we can go over time, but with eight speakers.
Okay, I'm sorry if I went a little too long.
No, it's fine. You spoke. It's good to leave with questions. There were some very interesting comments and questions. So hopefully at another time we can pick that up, and we'll take a 2-minute break. And Rabbi Liebtag, I think, is waiting in the wings, and everybody want to get stretched. If you live in Israel, like Rabbi Liebtag does, you can get a cup of coffee. But if you're living in North America, you'll have to wait for the cup of coffee. I think it's fine because he should be Loeg L'Rush. The fact that we're not living there, I think it's okay. It's not that's halacha in the cemetery. I don't know. I told him he shouldn't eat during class. I did tell him that. But thank you very much for that. It's a very well-known story, but all the insights you added, I think it's always good. And sometimes, as the Mesilat Yesharim says, is the introduction, sort of going over the basics, what we know is the most important, because there's always new insights. And we really appreciate it. And we look forward to seeing you in a few weeks. And be well. Thank you very much. Okay. Rabbi, we'll start in a couple of weeks. Rabbi Liebtag.
Now I'm embarrassed that I spoke about a Gemara, about a pasuk in a Gemara, and I didn't spend half the time talking about the whole Perek and Mishlei that it came from. And now I'm afraid that I missed something. So.
It's okay. it's good to do things with Sarah and Tisha B'Av.
That's right.
Yes. Okay.
You lose the microscope.
All right. I'm going to stretch for 2 minutes because after sitting for all these hours, I'll see everybody in a couple minutes. Rabbi, you won't start without me, right?
I'll start with what?
No, you won't start without me unless you really want.
No. We have to follow orders.
Oh, okay. Very good.
I can stop and start the recording. How's that?
Yes. Are you really going to do that, Rabbi?
Just right now, because for the guy's sake, it'll make it a lot easier.
I'll start and stop. But put it on. It's a long recording. Okay.
Stop.